You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
And now for something completely different. This is, we're going to talk about, in the international segment, we're going to talk about the Zimbabwe election. So what I'm going to do in this piece is sort of, they're having an election. It's first election without Mugabe since 1980. We're going to go back through the circumstances of the country and a bit on the history of the country as to why this is such a BFD. We're gonna look at that. What might possibly
what
result
does BFD
out of this.
Mean? Does it mean big fucking deal?
Yes,
that's so cool. So
we're gonna look back. We're not gonna look at the candidates because there's too many of them. But I am also gonna put a disclaimer in, just saying, like, again with the South Africa story, I am gonna talk in racialized terms: black, white, Indian, etc. That's how the Zimbabwe government measure their population and the way they act and move about and track kind of racism like South Africa. So just be warned, those terms will be coming up. Let's get into it. The saga of Robert Mugabe's rule is finally set to close as Zimbabwe embarks on its first elections without him in just 6 days. As the country prepares to go to the polls, emboldened by the prospect of free and fair elections, both candidates are seeking to build the country up again so that it can re-emerge from the isolation and chaos that defined Mugabe's regime. Since Mugabe was elected to power in 1980, after the collapse of white minority-ruled Rhodesia, the country has endured illegal land grabs, economic collapse, ethnic violence, and has become a pariah state with relations to authoritarian regimes that for years propped up the Mugabe regime. But after the country teetered on the precipice of becoming another failed state in Africa, the political establishment finally made their move and ousted Mugabe. And now that the transitional period is almost over, a new hope for Zimbabwe potentially sits on the horizon. To remind us of what happened, here is the moment a Zimbabwean army official hijacked the state television station and detained the president in what they insisted was absolutely not a coup.
We wish to make it abundantly clear that this is not a military takeover of government. What the Zimbabwe Defense Forces is doing is to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation in our country, which, if not addressed, may result in a violent conflict.
Zimbabwe is a country of both boundless hope and unfulfilled potential. The country has the highest literacy rate on the African continent. It has the foundations of a democratic system established under the Lancaster House Agreement. It has fertile land and enormous mineral reserves. And on top of this, it has direct freight rail links to both Atlantic and Indian Oceans. Most of all, however, it is home to Victoria Falls, arguably the second biggest tourist attraction in Africa before the pyramids. Yet for over 60 years, the political situation has meant that the country has not yet realized the economic and political freedoms that it has on many occasions been so close to achieving. It's a dream of Zimbabwe being a peaceful, democratic, multiracial society within the Commonwealth that stands as an African powerhouse to rival the likes of New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and Canada. The dream has been obstructed by the political, economic, and racial divisions created by British colonialism that so often flare up into violence like an unhealed wound. So in order to understand the conditions around selection, I need to give a quick rundown of what the dream is and how it has so often been spoiled. And this process of obstructing that dream begins with a New Zealander called Sir Garfield Todd, who was Prime Minister of Southern Rhodesia. This is him.
I think our 56 years in Zimbabwe have been to us a time of tremendous fulfillment and blessing, and we are tremendously grateful that we were sent out from New Zealand in 1934 on a mission of which we had really no understanding, but it turned out to be the most wonderful privilege.
Amen, amen.
I thought I'd achieved a lot, but there was only one thing to achieve, and that was to lay a political foundation on which you could build a non-racial community sharing in government, and I failed to do that. So we had to have a civil war, lose 40,000 people in deaths. But that wasn't the biggest cost. The biggest cost was the damage you did to the people themselves. So many wounded, so many homes broken up, so many homes burnt down. It was devastating, and that could have been avoided.
Garfield Todd was in power from 1953 to 1958 and is one of New Zealand's unsung heroes. He was a politically liberal missionary from Invercargill, whose education system in Zimbabwe means that the population still remains one of the most educated on the continent. He mandated that black people be addressed by Mr. or Mrs. instead of AM or AF, which stands for African male or female, and he set in place the first step to black political agency, new multiracial trade unions. The plan was for Zimbabwe to be handed over to black majority rule in the 1960s under British supervision and to remain part of the Commonwealth. But he was ousted by Zimbabwe's white community as a dangerous radical race traitor and was ostracized for fraternizing with non-whites. And instead of his dream of a multiracial society, the country illegally declared independence from Britain and continued white minority rule as a rogue state. Here is an example of the mainstream attitude towards desegregation that white Rhodesians had, as echoed by their prime minister, Ian Smith.
I don't believe in black majority rule ever in Rhodesia, not in a thousand years. I repeat, I believe in black and whites working together. If one day it's white and the next day it is black, I believe we will have failed, and I think it will be a disaster for Rhodesia.
Todd continued pushing his dream. He became a political prisoner in Rhodesia, but his dream for a multiracial state where all citizens were treated with dignity never died. And amid the death of Rhodesia and the free and fair democratic government created by the British during the Lancaster House negotiations, it seemed like Prime Minister Mugabe, Joshua Nkomo, and President Banana would realise Todd's dream. But it was not to be for a very simple reason. Unlike South Africa a decade and a half later, Zimbabwe never had a formal Truth and Reconciliation Commission for the crimes and atrocities of the Bush War and white minority rule. This set the foundation for the country today. Mugabe was a man filled with a desire for retribution against the West and anyone who stood against him. He set about dispossessing President Banana of his reserve powers and engaged in a tribal conflict against the minority Matabele using North Korean-trained soldiers and former Bush War veterans. Here are testimonies from those related to some of the 35,000 who were shot, beaten, burned and butchered by the Gukurahundi in Zimbabwe's Matabeleland province.
What happened to your brothers?
They just killed them.
Do you know how they were killed?
They were killed by soldiers.
What were they doing at the time the soldiers arrived?
My one brother they killed when he was closing up his cattle.
And the other brother?
They found him asleep at night.
And shot him while he was asleep?
They woke him up and took him into the bush and shot him.
My family, he died. Was shot by the army with my grandfather and his two sons.
So you lost your grandfather?
Yes.
And two uncles,
yes.
Cousins?
Yes.
What happened?
They just shot them.
Well, what exactly were the circumstances?
No, they just come, they only just shoot them when...
The army just walked into the village?
Yes, yes.
Were they looking for particular people?
They were looking, they just only shoot only when they just saw them by the house. He shot them dead.
Did they question them before they shot them?
No.
They just walked into the village and shot them?
Yeah.
To further crush the dream of a multiracial, democratic, free society, the willing buyer, willing seller agreement over land agreed to between whites and blacks in Zimbabwe was in tatters when Mugabe took power. He demanded that Britain help fund resettlement of blacks onto white land. However, Britain declined to do so on the basis of its increasing authoritarianism. When Britain finally stopped meeting the cost of land redistribution, this happened.
With white farmers still owning the bulk of the land, veterans of the war and the unemployed grew impatient. A dispute with Britain over compensation for land redistribution saw farmers intimidated, beaten, or even murdered. Mugabe's government allowed it to happen, then facilitated it and encouraged it, ignoring court rulings that it was illegal.
I'm now going to have an enforcement from Harare to come and take more farms.
How can you surrender something willingly that you've lived on for 60 years? We shall have to sell all the mulatta, I suppose, to try and get our money back and this sort of thing, and gum poles and what have you. We'll try and sell all that before we go, and all our tobacco and maize and cattle. And we went for a wheat crop, and then we'll wish the comrades the very best of British luck.
Decades of agricultural experience departed, voluntarily or forcibly. The consequence was that a country which was once regarded as the breadbasket of Africa began to starve. Harvests shrank, shelves were empty, and rampant inflation meant currency became virtually worthless. Through it all, Mugabe, who took on the title of president, blamed others for the problems.
What we reject is the persistence of vestigial attitudes from the Rhodesian yesteryears. Attitudes of a master race, master colour, master owner, and master employer.
The Commonwealth suspended Zimbabwe's membership. Mugabe opted to quit the organisation. International sanctions were imposed. Mugabe remained defiant.
Whilst the veterans continued to do their damage and the economy nosedived, Mugabe started printing money and the currency experienced hyperinflation. The Zimbabwe dollar was abandoned, food shortages and power outages became common, and the political situation deteriorated further. Whites and Indians continued to flee, and when opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai looked set to replace Mugabe in 2008 as president, he was forced to shelter in the Dutch embassy in Harare, fearing for his life. And so we come to this election. Mugabe is gone, but there are still concerns. Emmerson Mnangagwa, the transitional president, is still part of the ZANU-PF political machine that has dominated national politics since 1980. He played a role in the Gukurahundi killings, he aided Mugabe in silencing and intimidating political dissidents, and many in the country fear that his election will give him a mandate to continue Mugabe's ruination of the country. But he has held public meetings with the white farmers of the country, he has promised against further land grabs, and instead has proposed leases that will initiate a smooth transition towards the black majority gaining their economic freedom too through industrial agriculture. His rhetoric seems to be conciliatory rather than confrontational, and there's hope that the election ZANU-PF oversees will finally be free and fair. Most importantly, his background looks like it will favour the economy. He is from rural Masvingo province and understands the importance of agriculture. He has emboldened Zimbabweans to return to vote. He has emboldened some to consider moving back. But with so many what-ifs surrounding his potential presidency, it's unclear if anything significant will change. If he lives up to the talk, Zimbabwe will become an open, democratic society that engages economically with the rest of the world, and finally sees swathes of the black majority population starting businesses and gaining employment. It's an image that resembles the dream Garfield Todd had for a radical new liberal society in southern Africa. July the 30th will be the day we will see if it comes to fruition. All that is clear is that in 6 days, the Mugabe era of Zimbabwean history will be well and truly over. The question is, will Mnangagwa continue the policies? That is the big question at the moment. If you are Zimbabwean, do text in 5395 or call in at 309-387-9. The other thing I was going to say on top of that, everyone knows Mnangagwa is going to win. Nelson Chamisa, he doesn't really have the charisma that Morgan Tsvangirai had. Morgan Tsvangirai obviously has unfortunately passed away. Absolutely, rest in peace. Do get in touch and let us know if you are Zimbabwean. Would you go back? Would you go back to vote? Would you even go back to live? And if you
Mnangagwa was in charge.
And as my old mate Stevie Wonder said, peace has come to Zimbabwe.
95BFM Podcasts. 95BFM is supported by our listeners. Sign up for a Simplicity B card at 95bfm.com/signup and support independent media from $4.20 a month.